The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is Colombia Calling. Yes, we're back with episode 243 with Chris Morfus this week. You may remember Chris. He was on the show all those many moons ago when President Trump was about to come down to Colombia for his visit, a two-day visit, but of course he cancelled it. We were on that show with Victoria Malganan in her bar, the Rebellion in the downtown area, and I did get a few emails from a couple of people out there saying it would be great to hear Chris's outlook and views on Bogota, because he's like an alternative methods of public transport or transport expert. Let me give you a little bit of a background. For many years, he was a founding executive director and the board chair for the California Bicycle Coalition, and then he was in the executive office for the Sacramento Air Quality Agency. So this is a guy who knows his stuff and has been living down here in Bogota for a few years, and he gets involved in local politics, and in particular bicycle politics. And of course, we know, those of us here on Columbia Calling, listeners and people coming to Bogota and Columbia, know that this is a cycling country. Not only rural cycling, I'll give a name drop to the Legend of El Dorado, the mountain bike race, but also greats like Nairo Quintana and so on in the Tour de France. But in the cities itself, started by Antanas Mockus all those years ago, bike lanes, and then Enrique Peñalosa in his first term. We're now in Enrique Peñalosa's second term as mayor, and he continues to push the issue of bicycles as a major alternative form of transport. So welcome on Columbia Calling once again, Chris.
Richard, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, of course. Now, so we know about how you ended up down here. We don't need to talk about that, because we talked to lots of people about how you ended up in, how they ended up in Bogota or in Colombia. Let's talk about your expertise. Let's talk about this, this transport, for example, and public transport in Bogota. How would you like to start by describing Bogota and its public transport?
Well, Richard, thank you. And actually, we can cover a bit of why I'm here and this topic at the same time, because during my days as a California and sometimes USA leader on these topics, Bogota did acquire a name for itself. During those late 1990s and early 2000s under Mockus and Peñalosa, the rapid development of a cycleway system, rapid implementation of the bus rapid transit system, and the growth of the Sunday Ciclovia into one of the world's great recurring outdoor events all took place, and those things trickled up north. Even in the early sort of pre-internet days, we did hear about them, and ever since, I had desired to come down and see for myself, and I finally did, and have been gotten hooked on the place.
This is great. I like this. You know, the reference to it starting here in Colombia and trickling north. It's unusual. You know, normally our politicians are always looking to Europe and to the U.S. for inspiration. But that was Mockus here, you know, being creative.
There had been countries, of course, such as the Netherlands and Denmark, that going back to the 1970s had decided to confront the energy crisis and rapid automobilization of their cities by creating extensive infrastructure systems. But nobody outside of those areas and really anywhere in the world had done anything quite as rapidly as Mokas, but particularly Peñalosa did in his first term here. He ended up building upwards of 300 kilometers of bikeways in a little over 3 years. And so that, you know, pencils out to a, you know, roughly a kilometer or per week or so they did, or even more, and more than a kilometer per week. And so that's pretty astonishing if you think about it. And then he also brought, you know, had Peñalosa took a visit to Curitiba, Brazil, where they had begun a larger bus rapid transit system, decided to copy that and got going on the first troncales of our city's bus rapid transit system, the Transmilenio. And prior to that, Mokas, with the help of Gil Peñalosa, Enrique's brother, and a woman named Lucy Barriga, took the what had been a kind of a community-oriented ciclovía on Sundays starting in 1974, something my buddy Jaime Ortiz Marino had invented, what for 20 years had been 10 or 20 kilometers of open streets of ciclovía event on Sundays, and Gil Peñalosa, Mokas, Lucy Barriga took it and blew it out into the world-famous event that it is now, where on Sundays we close or partially close 120 kilometers of roadway to automobiles, and we end up with a million plus people out every Sunday, bicycling, walking, roller skating, holding hands with the dogs, with the kids, skateboarding, you name it. Bogota on Sundays, it really is just astonishing and something that anybody who cares about these things needs to see once in their life.
It's true. It's true. Well, you talk very positively about this. Do you have a role in this administration about this? We need to get this clear straight away. I mean, do you have a role? Do you have a part? Are you a consultant for the administration?
No, I have no formal affiliation with the administration. I did advise them just as a volunteer as they were recently creating the pedestrian safety element of a Vision Zero plan, an attempt to reduce traffic fatalities in Bogota down to zero. So, and I do have a volunteer and sometimes consulting relationships with two local nonprofit organizations. One is Despacio, the Spanish word for slow, Despacio, a marvelous little think tank here in Bogota. And the second is Ciudad Sostenible, Sustainable City, a woman-led NGO that has a number of interesting projects going on. And Richard, any of your wealthier listeners could do a lot worse than to send some money to either of those two organizations. They can really stretch a buck.
All right. Well, I'll be sure to look those up, Ciudad Sostenible and Despacio. Excellent to know that you are involved, not in the administration, but in, let's say, change, let's say, bringing about change here in Bogota. Now, you know, I mean, it's of no, it'll be no strange issue to my listeners that I have harped on about the issues in Bogota and, of course, written about it and so on. And one of the main problems in Bogota, of course, is transport. That's why we're talking about it. And it will end up being the campaign position or campaign topic for every subsequent mayoral election. It's got involved as well in national elections. Bogota doesn't have a metro. Medellin has a metro. Bogota's been talking about a metro since 1950 in the newspapers. But let's not talk about a metro right now. But I want to talk about let's talk about your Despacio and this and what you're doing there, because how do you reduce civilian or pedestrian fatalities in a city where people don't respect the traffic norms? I mean, that's as simple as it is. I very nearly crashed the other day. I had my wife and my son in the car, and had I not been, you know, really on top, because driving here is about knowing exactly what's going on around you and reading it, which I think a lot of people don't do, the guy ran the red light and went through, and it was millimeters across. And of course, the traffic policeman was there and just sort of waved them on. I mean, that was it. Is that how can we improve our lives as citizens in the city if even the most basic things are not being adhered to?
So big changes are underway in terms of how the world approaches traffic safety. In North America in particular, for many years, the emphasis has been on individual responsibility. And the change now is to take more of a systems approach and to create conditions under which mistakes that people will make are less likely to be result in fatal or serious injury collisions. And those efforts have been wrapped under the banner of what's called Vision Zero.
Okay.
The idea that we can work towards having zero traffic fatalities, that these events are preventable. Sweden had great success with that. It's caught on around the world. And Bogota is currently a big player in that. Yeah. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has a large foundation, and global traffic safety is one of his primary themes. And Bogota is currently under Peñalosa 2 here, one of their 10 focus cities around the world. And so their emphasis here in Bogota is on speed reduction, because the clearest direct scientific connection towards traffic safety is that when these collisions occur at lower speeds, the results are less serious. And in fact, the traffic speeds in Bogota are low enough such that almost nobody inside of a motor vehicle dies. In Bogota, only 5% of the traffic fatalities in Bogota are people inside of motor vehicles, versus that would be something like, 70 or 80% in the United States. And so half, just to close this point, in Bogota, the crisis here in traffic safety involves motorcycles, rapid use of motorcycles. Nearly half the fatalities here are now people on motorcycles. And then people walking or bicycling are disproportionately victimized as well, because they are vulnerable in collisions at almost any speed.
Yeah, I've been hit by a motorcycle going too fast, trying to swing outside, and ran into the back of me. I was hit by a motorcycle who was also trying to rob me once. And then I was going to say to you, how could anyone drive fast in a car with the potholes in the traffic? I mean, that's the best limitation. But yeah, it is the motorcycles and pedestrians and cyclists. Well, let's move on a little bit then to cycling, because that's the big theme here. Now, our mayor Peñalosa, for all of his faults and benefits and so on, he campaigns on behalf of cycling. He is a cyclist, and you're not looking one at his 6'8", towering over whatever height he is. But it's all about cycling. But I would say, since the last time he was in power, I guess was 20 years ago or so, and to now, the cycling community and the cycling environment has changed. Has he changed his outlook towards these cycle lanes and towards cycling, or is he still pushing the same themes? Everyone should leave traffic. Everyone should get on their bikes, and we'll do this.
Well, he is clearly a fanatic, a supporter of bicycling. I don't think that's changed at all. And what he did has demonstrated results. Bogota, prior to his first administration, had very, very little bicycle infrastructure. And as I mentioned, he built hundreds of kilometers of bikeways very, very rapidly. And Bogota, at least as far as we could measure it, had very little bicycling in the late 1970s, urban bicycling, maybe 0.5%. Of the trips were made by bicycle. And now we show upwards of 7 or 8% of the trips in Bogota are made by bicycle. And in a city of 9 million people, that adds up to roughly 600,000 to 900,000 daily trips by bicycle. And it's not clear that very many cities at all in the world outside of China have more daily bicycling trips than does Bogota. Now, places like Copenhagen or Amsterdam have a higher percentage of trips, but they don't have the population of Bogota.
It's interesting. I mean, when he first came in, obviously it's revolutionary, and the big era for me was the cycling lanes on the pavements, along the Trece, the Once, wherever else, because you're taking away from pedestrians. The whole idea is to take cars off the roads. And of course, you're putting pedestrians at risk because the cyclists aren't adhering to the rules either. And I'm happy to see that that's been, reversed slowly in some places. And of course, cyclists are going to complain because it's along the Trece, if I'm not mistaken, in Chapinero, where all the vendors are in their lanes. But I wouldn't want to cycle on the road there with all the buses either. So you've got this just conflict of everything at all the same time. But my overwhelming fear is okay, 600 to 900,000 trips, cycling trips a day is huge. Think about the cycle messengers, the guys on those big heavy bikes taking oranges, you know, between places and so on. This is a huge number, a number of which I was not aware. But I don't see cycling as a like 7 to 8%. But do we think it's going to get to 15 to 20% in this city? Because people have to travel so far to get to a lot of their work. So I don't know. I leave that with you. I think investing in cycling is great. And I believe in it. And I used to be a cyclist until they robbed my bike. And I used to be a cyclist until my bike was stolen. And yet now I haven't replaced it because I haven't had the cash flow. Unless someone wants to donate a bike to Columbia Calling, that would be great. But aside from that, I don't know. Could we say it's actually a feasible alternative in the city of 9 million where people travel 2 hours on public transport, 2.5 hours to get to their jobs? Are we going to take those people out of the Transmilenio, out of the buses, or get them out of their cars as they're coming from Suba or the Calera or somewhere else?
So a couple of thoughts on that. Yeah. Part of the, I think, an important context that your listeners should understand about Bogota is how densely populated this city is. So a recent University of California, Davis, professor came out with his research suggesting that Bogota was the third most densely populated city in the world. Mm. And so we've got 20,000 people per square kilometer, 54,000 people per square mile. Mm. So, for example, that's 50% more dense than Brooklyn, which for the United States is a really dense place. Mm. It's twice the density of San Francisco's Mission District, that city's most dense area, to give some of your North American listeners an idea of how dense this place is. So just when you mentioned the Carrera 13 and conflicts between bicyclists and pedestrians and the street vendors, the streets here are very, very contested. So Peñalosa, in his first term, built out a whole bunch of cycleways, as you mentioned, the vast majority of which are on the pavement or the sidewalk, the term we use in North America. And so in that sense, it is open to question the quality of the bike infrastructure he built during his first term. There's no questioning the quantity. He mm-hmm. built an enormous number of bikeways. There is, over time, perhaps some valid criticisms of the quality of those bikeways. And that's changing now that he's mayor again. Mm-hmm. He's getting technical advice from the Bloomberg Foundation and their global streets design initiative. And so the newer bikeways, as you're seeing in Chapinero, are on this part of the street as they probably should have been in the first place. So this time around, he's not building as many so rapidly. I think he's more than halfway through his second term of office, and he's built about 20 plus kilometers of new bikeways. But they are better this time around. And Richard, to answer your question, no. People who need to travel, 20 kilometers to get to their job are probably not going to use bicycles, but there are a large percentage of trips in town that are shorter than that. And so is it feasible over time to reach 15 or 20% mode share for bicycling? I do think so. It depends on the available alternatives. People increasingly are more prosperous here. Many folks are buying motorcycles as their first motorized vehicle. Others are buying cars. But the situation with the buses is becoming more and more desperate. And so many people are willing to take their chances with the bicycle. Mm-hmm. For many people here, of course, in the 80-cent U.S. bus fare, it's not insignificant for them. And also the buses, the Transmilenio buses were designed to carry 6 people per square meter at peak hour, and they're actually carrying up to 8.
Yeah.
So your listeners can envision 8 people in a square meter standing. And so some people decide to ride a bike instead.
Yeah.
And it's particularly, and even women, we've got about 25% or so of the trips are made by women, which is pretty typical in the West. And so for many women, riding a bike offers independence and freedom and a certain pleasantness that security. Being in tight quarters in the bus with our little macho culture here does not.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I think very, very key points touched on in that segment, and fascinating. I mean, lots of figures I had no idea about. That's why you talk to an expert to be clear, make it clear, someone who knows how to talk. And I believe, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, because you're getting ready for a conference in New Orleans. So, you know, we've got this is famous people here on Columbia Calling. But this is episode 243. We're here with Chris Morfus. Check him out on LinkedIn and all the other stuff. You'll find his posts and so on. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back talking further about transport, biking, walking, and so on in Bogota. So thank you so much for listening. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here with Chris Morfus. This is episode 243 of Columbia Calling. And yeah, we're talking about, you know, obviously the obvious problems in Bogota and the obvious issues and going on, but the benefits of cycling, you know, where the cycle lanes are, it's flat. So you're not climbing up the mountain, although you are at 2,600 meters above sea level. So, you know, oxygen in your lungs is going to be somewhat limited. Aside from that, you know, things are going the right way. Things are improving. You were mentioning, we were talking about the fact of bike lanes being on the pavement, which for me has always been the most annoying thing when you're walking along like the 15 or the 11 or the 13 or wherever they are. And you said they may have been poorly made. The ones where I used to remember around the 80s were always the flattest, most level parts of that road, of that pavement. So you'd see all the oficinistas walking on that part in their high heels because they couldn't walk on the uneven paving stones, which are... someone clarified to me why things aren't properly stuck down here. They just put sand and then the paving stone on top, and then you've got the stealth paving stone when you step on it and the pebble rushes up your ankle. But you would see all the oficinistas in high heels and nice shoes walking on the cycle lane because it was the most stable part of it. So of course, taking away from the cyclist, and then the cyclist would come up behind you whistling and shouting and stuff. But I think that was a few years ago. Now people are being taken off the pavements. This is a good thing. You were talking about motos, the motorcycles, everyone getting that as their first vehicle. You can buy your motorcycle in installments on your electricity bill. So that's a big plus. And it's a status symbol to have a motorcycle, especially if you're in, let's say, Bogota is stratified. If you're in Strato 1 or so on, getting a motorcycle and then being mobile is a huge deal. But I don't know. I mean, let's talk then. You're going up to New Orleans. You're going to be talking about... remind me what you're going to be talking about, sorry.
Well, I'm headed to the Walk Bike Places Conference in New Orleans that's happening right about the time this podcast will be airing, and basically to discuss these topics. And I'm looking forward to sharing what I think I've learned down here. I remember that Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State, William Seward, once described, to paraphrase, Russia as an enigma wrapped inside a puzzle, wrapped inside, you know, a mystery. And I can relate to that in terms of just of living here in Bogota. The place continues to amaze me, and I still don't claim to understand it all. It's very funny. The life here as an expat is very interesting at times, because I spoke very little Spanish upon arrival. My Spanish now is good, but it's not great. And so I know sometimes I'm in a room with people, and sometimes I'm the only person who doesn't understand something because of a historical cultural reference. But at other times I feel as though, because of my international perspective, I'm the only person who does understand something.
True. Now, it's the first time Abraham Lincoln has ever been referenced or to it on Columbia Calling. So I thank you for that. You know, bringing the level up again. It is true. Bogota is an enigma. But coming up, though, in October, we've got a big deal, a big event coming up, October 15th, Walk 21. Are you going to be involved in this? I mean, we're talking about pedestrianizing and making a city friendlier for pedestrians, I believe.
I'll be attending the conference and looking forward to helping as a volunteer and guiding some of the folks around town. Yeah, it's very exciting. We'll have about 1,000 experts from around the globe coming to Bogota to talk about this theme of walking, including experts I know from Los Angeles and Paris and elsewhere will be coming. And I think whereas Bogota in my circles really earned a lot of fame for its bicycling and its buses, I really think it's on this topic of walking that Bogota really shines. That's been among the most pleasant surprises of my both personal and professional development down here is how enjoyable Bogota is as a place to walk. I think it's in part just because compared to so much of the North American landscape, Bogota is just so interesting and stimulating. Every block carries with it a surprise. Now, granted, it isn't always easy to get across the street in one piece. The motorists here do lack a yield culture. They don't yield, so you have to decide how aggressive you're willing to be in terms of getting across the street. But once you're across the street, the environment is quite lively. There's a retail environment. Quite often you've got street merchants or you've got public performers or just the stores are always so interesting. And again, the way in which the city is so densely populated, as I mentioned earlier, just makes every block interesting.
Yeah, I'm a walker. I'm from London. I would sooner walk anywhere than, you know, and I'll set out an hour beforehand to walk a place. It's not about the finances, not economy and so on. It's just walking, getting to know the city. It's a certain appropriation of the city and just not having to use public transport. I mean, that's the thing, because for me, the start is I used to use the Transmilenio all the time. I used to use the buses all the time. Then I moved into cycling, and then my bike was stolen, and I became a father, and things change. I've been robbed on the buses. I've been here for almost 12 years and still can't work out the maps on the Transmilenio. And sometimes when I get in there and I talk to the person who's there to help me, they send me the wrong way because it's just Bogotanos being awesome. Bogotanos just trying to help. And where I'm doing my thesis down by the Estación de la Sabana, where in theory, you know, there's going to be a metro station near to the Voto Nacional, and then Estación de Sabana is not going to be included in the metro system. But where I'm doing it down there, the ends of some of the Transmilenio stations are actually bazooka crack dens, the ends of them underneath the roofs. So the homeless, the as they call them, the nieros, but I don't like that particularly, the homeless population live underneath the shelters and smoke their low quality crack and are there grinding down parts of the bricks to mix with it to make it go further. And you're like, I don't want to use that. I don't want to be there, and I don't feel particularly safe. And I think I'm a foreigner. I'm 6'2". I'm very white. You know, I'm clearly not Colombian. Could possibly pass for an Argentine, but in Argentina, not here. You know, it's like, I'm very aware of this. In particular, when I go downtown, and I put a cap on and I put my sort of a coat on, and I move around now because people know me in certain areas and what have you. But you have to be careful. One of the big issues about this public transport is we've got to get, let's say, Strato 6. I did mention the stratification. We've got to get Stratos 5 and 6 out of their vehicles and into public transport. And that would be a reduction of proper vehicles. Because if we talk about 5 and 6 and possibly 4, I reckon that most of those families or a great percentage have the two cars to avoid the pico y placa, you know, the driving restrictions. And, of course, then you've got the ones with their security details. So maybe one or two escoltas, the big cars, who are subject to no laws. They go through lights, turn left where they're not allowed to, turn right where they're not allowed to. All in the name of, in inverted commas, security. This is not Bogota of the 1980s anymore or the early 1990s. Bogota has really come forwards, and you'll see that by the amount of foreigners coming here, multinationals, reopening offices, street life, as you mentioned, because previously it wasn't. And we've got to get those guys out. Many years ago, I was in a press conference at the Alcaldía Mayor's office, of the town, the mayor's office. So many Transmilenio managers ago, and he was giving a talk saying, oh yeah, and the Transmilenio is this, and the Transmilenio is this, and we've improved this, and we've improved this. And I just went, my only question, everyone else was pandering to it. And I said, well, how did you get here today? Well, yeah, with my driver. And I was like, well, that's, therein lays the problem. He's like, why didn't you? The station is there. You would have had to have walked about 25 meters to get to this. We've got to change the whole culture. I mean, this is your job. This is what you work on. It's about changing this culture, but class, identity, and appearance are so ingrained that I think you're up against it. I don't know what you feel about this. I've talked a long time, but I don't know what you feel about this. Take a big breath.
Welcome to the 3-hour version of Columbia Calling. Richard, yes, so class is interwoven with transport, and you've mentioned stratification on this in previous episodes. It is a little different concept for many of your listeners outside of Columbia to grasp, but the city is organized in these neighborhoods and districts that are designated a certain estrato, in ostensibly to establish different utility rates for the different barrios, but it creates a very rigid system of social stratification, roughly akin to race in the United States. If one thinks of Chicago in terms of the way that city is organized from south to north, and tending to be poorer and people of color in the south, tending to be less whiter and wealthier towards the north, Bogota is something very, very similar. And so you've got a situation in which the wealthy people to the north of Bogota, for example, demand every day that people come to walk their dogs, to wipe the butts of their precious babies, to clean their homes, to drive their cars, to serve them cappuccinos in the cafes. But those same people insist that those poor people not be allowed to live in those areas. And so every day, people from the south of Bogota need to travel to the north to perform these services for the wealthier folks. Now, those are the longer trips that you mentioned earlier, and those are not usually going to be done by walking and bicycling. They're going to be done via mass transit. But walking and bicycling can serve as the feeder modes at the point of origin for those trips. If people can walk or bicycle a kilometer to the bus rapid transit station, it's going to make their lives a lot easier. I don't think anytime soon we're going to get the wealthiest swath of Bogota society to give up their cars. But I think as a matter of public policy, you do not emphasize building roads. You make driving as unattractive or as inconvenient as it can be by making sure that they're being charged a lot to park, perhaps being charged eventually to drive in the city at peak hours. Perhaps we could implement here a congestion fee a la London. So it's difficult. As in the United States and everywhere, transport and land use are very much interlinked. And so as long as Bogota has very, very segregated housing policies in which the communities are a bit of a monoculture in terms of the wealth of people within a certain community, well, then you're going to have big transport problems because people who are going to do the work to perform the services the wealthier people demand are going to need to travel long distances. And so for that, we need robust public transit and integrated with walking and bicycling.
It's true. It's true. I mean, it's just one of those. It's going to take generations, let's say. And there's so many, additional issues in Colombia to be able to have to resolve to even start, let's scraping away at this one that I brought up. But now let's talk. I mean, cycling is up. This is a good thing. We've definitely seen it. I mean, you can see it since I've been here. It must be safer. People do complain about the robberies and so on. There is a bit of a bike lash going on, of course. How do we get cyclists as well to obey the traffic norms? I mean, I don't know. There's one crossing. I think it's 76 with 11. And the bikes don't stop. And as a driver just going down there, I'm very, very wary. and also as a pedestrian crossing the road there, I'm very wary. And, you know, and I feel, what can I do when I get hit by a motorcycle going at 10 kilometers an hour or hit by a bicycle at 10 kilometers an hour? It's going to hurt, you know. It's the same deal. It's a vehicle. These are vehicles. They have to have rules. Is the current administration actually putting in rules for cyclists?
So the bike lash has arrived at Columbia Calling.
Well, I'm all over it, because I think I was the only one to obey lights when I was cycling.
So bicycles themselves are inherently very, very flexible devices. Mm-hmm. And so their operators have a lot of inherent freedom. And mm-hmm. sometimes they don't fit in so easily. Here's where I'm a little bit at odds with the administration. I would suggest that the design of the bikeways, which are by and large bidirectional, so you've got you've got two-way paths on the pavement, on the sidewalk of a street, and so you've got issues then whenever those paths reach an intersection or a bike rider needs to make a turn, because the design of the bikeways is, to me, very, very, it creates a lot of awkward situations in which it isn't really obvious what the bike rider should do. And then, of course, we've got something like 500 kilometers of these cycleways, ciclorutas, but we've got 12,500 kilometers of roadways without the ciclorutas. Mm-hmm. And so if on the 500 kilometers of ciclorutas, we're teaching bike riders to use the sidewalks, to use the pavements, well, when they leave those streets, they can't really be expected to all of a sudden operate on roadways as they would if they were in a car. So I think you've got really, I think the issues are those of design, and I think it's kind of intractable. I think Bogota is going to have an issue with the behavior of bicyclists as long as the bulk of the bikeways are these odd two-way paths that sit on the pavement and on the sidewalks.
And on that same side, you know, if you're going north, why isn't it only on the north? If you're going south, why isn't it only on the south side? I have a real issue with this, because, of course, if anyone wants to overtake, they immediately come in, you know, oncoming traffic.
Most of the new bikeways are one-way. They're unidirectional paths on one-way streets, and they're on the street. The design is much better on the new ones, but we've got these legacy bikeways from the previous generations that I think are going to cause issues in terms of bicyclist behavior and the interactions with pedestrians as long as they exist.
But I think, these are issues, of course, but overwhelmingly, it's positive. It's positive there are more people on bicycles. It's positive that more people are prepared to do this. I've seen more bicycle shops. Is it a law now people have to wear helmets?
No.
Oh, let's campaign on this, because I would like to see that.
We will have to arm wrestle over that one, Richard, because mandatory helmet laws for bicyclists are demonstrated to be among the most effective measures to deter bicycling.
Okay.
People riding bikes. It's much better to have a lot of people riding bikes with or without helmets than it is to not have people riding bikes.
Interesting. I guess so.
Bear in mind that however you want to describe them, and then these people on bikes who admittedly are doing some things that cause some conflicts with people walking, and can spook people in cars or on motorcycles, they end up causing very little harm.
Yeah.
Bicyclists end up, the number of fatalities that bicyclists cause to others is zero or near zero. Serious injuries, very, very low compared to the thousands of people who die or are seriously injured because they're involved in collisions with motor vehicles or motorcycles.
Oh, aside from my one friend who was hit by a bicyclist going the wrong way on a road and hospitalized for several days. But that's another story. We're not going to go into that. But yeah, I do believe in exactly what you're saying. I mean, you know, taking it overwhelmingly as a positive thing. I mean, we've raised a lot of issues, but it's like there's so many layers to this onion that is Bogota and all of the differences that then beyond, as your quote, Stuart, Lincoln, etc., demonstrates, there's just so much else to be worked with to improve from various angles. I don't know, as we're winding down this show, is there anything else you'd like to add about these issues, cycling, walking, Bogota?
I think, you know, people should come on down and check it out for themselves. The Bogota is typical of Latin American cities in that life, to a great extent, is lived outdoors. The people here have grown up, by and large, without their own bedrooms. Many of their families have maybe one television in the living room, but not in the bedroom. Young kids, if they want to go out and play with their friends, or if they want to smooch their sweetie, they're going to go outside and do that in the public plazas or in the parks. And so life here is lived outdoors, and it really is a delightful aspect of living here. And it all ties together with having, you know, sidewalks connected to parks, connected to bikeways, with reliable public transit. It does make life here without a car very much possible, whether by choice in my case or out of necessity.
True. Well, listen, if you're in New Orleans, if I have listeners in New Orleans, do check out Chris up there talking at this walking conference that will be up very soon. What date are you talking?
I am speaking on Monday morning. I want to say September 17th.
Oh, wow. Okay. Perfect. So if you're here, or past or present, do check out Chris at this talk. But, you know, we're talking to a real expert on this. Let me remind you Chris's background: a founding executive director, board chair of the California Bicycle Coalition, and executive office of San Francisco Air Quality Agency. I mean, this is a guy who knows, and he's been, you know, his brain has been picked here in Bogota by the people in positions of power. I mean, they see his expertise and have been coming to him. There may be, I mean, you know, all things are up for debate, and all things are you know, can be disagreed with or agreed with. I mean, but that's the beauty of conversation and so on and so forth. This has been an excellent show, talking about a real issue that everybody has an opinion on here in Bogota, if not in Colombia, in truth. So, Chris, let me take this moment to say thank you so much for being again on Colombia Calling.
Richard, thank you.
It's a real pleasure. So we've been talking to Chris Morfus. This has been Colombia Calling, episode 243. We'll be back next week. I believe we're going to be talking about, I think it's free trade or fair trade coca. So someone in Holland who wants to start trying to legalize cocaine. So that'll be an interesting one to follow up with. Anyway, thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure to be here in Colombia Calling. Always a pleasure to keep broadcasting and have the listeners out there. So farewell, and keep on listening and spreading the word. Thank you again. Bye-bye.